Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. Hello and welcome to today's podcast. This is our last podcast for the year, and it certainly has been an interesting year. In today's segment, we will be talking to Mr. Kevin Mabry. He is the CEO of a leading cybersecurity and compliance firm for medical practices. It's known as Suntree Systems Corporation. They're based out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Kevin, thank you for your time, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we looked up your bio, and we looked you up on LinkedIn, did a little bit of Google snooping on you, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us how you got started in cyber and some of the, you know, turning points in your career?
Well, I guess it wasn't a start in cybersecurity up front. I've been around since doing, you know, more general IT since 99, and I did start it off doing more of the general IT for consumers. You know, I'd go over to somebody's house, somebody calls me, they can't find their mouse on the screen, you know, it's like, oh, so I'll go over there and find their mouse, you know, so doing things like that starting off. And the problem with that, I felt bad because I'm charging people, $35 or whatever for each trip to go and find their mouse or find their taskbar that they lost. Just little things like that. So I started looking into businesses. So I started actually in the legal industry, started working with, you know, legal law firms. And I was doing general IT with them. And I started thinking, you know what? And this was, you know, like in 2003. So if you take a look at the time of like hacking and all of the bad actors, it started actually growing around that time. You know, they started getting really good with what they were doing. You know, back in the day when you were doing hacking was just, you know, making somebody's screen turn differently or, you know, making their CD-ROM pop in and out. So that was fun stuff. But then it started getting worse and worse, and, you know. But around 2003, I started realizing there's something's going, you know. That's when I started actually with lawyers. And so I worked with lawyers for many years. And actually about in 2013, I started realizing the landscape of security has changed dramatically. It really has changed a lot. And, you know, I'm IT, you know, we kind of do a little bit of everything when it comes to, you know, security and technology. So, but I started realizing we in IT really don't know too much about security. Some of us think we do, but we really don't. And I can say I was one of those. So I started actually looking deeper into it, started studying for my CISSP and, you know, different certifications. And I didn't get the CISSP. I didn't actually go and take the test to get it, but I did study for it and got the knowledge of it because I started realizing there's just so much out there when it comes to security, and it's just gotten worse and worse. Then ransomware starts really coming in really heavily. In 2017, they had the WannaCry attack. All these things started coming in. So I started realizing they need real help. Medical practices, they have some of the most important information on us. I'm like, they have my parents, my family, you know, my family's information, my kids' information. I don't want that information out there because I know what they do with it. I know how they use it. I know why they use it. So I wanted to do what I can to start helping and protecting that. So that's the reason I started getting into, you know, like ethical hacking and learning about those things because I wanted to learn what are the bad actors doing. So if I can learn that, know that, then I can help to protect and guard others. And that's how I got into the medical practice because I realized that.
Well, it seems like right now, you know, as we come closer to, towards the end of the year now, it seems like the healthcare industry is really going to be hit hard, you know, as you said, with ransomware attacks, and I think it's going to get worse. I mean, it's not simply, you know, getting payment for, you know, just getting the information data, but it's going on the dark web, and now they're doing, like, extortion attacks, you know. This is going to get worse. But we can touch that later a little bit here in our podcast. Now, how did you come up with the name Suntree Systems? Now, most cybersecurity companies I've interviewed in the past, they all have some flavor of cyber or security. This is a very refreshing name. So how do you get that name?
They have black or something in it. Like I said, since it's been way before a lot of those companies have come out, Century Systems, I was thinking about it. You know, I used to be called KLM Computer Services Plus. The name was really long. It was too long to put in a URL. So I wanted to come up with something different, something unique. So I was thinking of time, and I was thinking of something from the ground up. So Century, that's why it's spelled Century. It says the same thing, like a century, 100 years or whatever, but it's spelled with S-E-N and then T-R-E-E, tree, so growing. So my first logo was actually a tree, and it had the, like the electronic, you know, like circuit board going up the tree. And so that's kind of how it came to that. So it's about systems. So I look at systems as this way. Every business has multiple systems. A system can be a CRM. A system can be an EMR, you know, a billings, you know, software, whatever they're using, their practice management software. All of those things are systems. And so that's how
Excellent.
I look at it, the system.
Excellent. Now, how long have you been in business? I look at your LinkedIn profile. It looks like you've been around for like well over 20 years or so.
Yes, since 99. Since 99.
Wow. Time has probably gone by pretty fast.
Seen a lot change.
Sure.
Oh, yes, it has.
Yeah, in fact, I remember when I was doing my master's, I think the only thing that we had back then, anything closely related to the internet, was like mainframe, you know, checking email on your mainframe.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how far it's come, technology.
I know, it is.
Well,
all the way down to your computers on your wrist now. I mean, those are computers, and they can be hacked.
Well, the example I like to use, Kevin, is that, you know, back in the late 90s, during the time of the dot-com craze, you know, everybody was, you know, talking about, you know, Java this, Java that, and like an Oracle database to configure. I mean, that would have been like 30,000, you know, with full licensing.
Yeah.
But now you can configure an Oracle database server in Azure for like maybe as low as $100 a month. I mean, that was just totally unheard back then. So, but anyway. So I've noticed you've had some good accomplishments too. Like you got an ebook or a few books out there, news interviews. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I actually wrote a book. It's it's about small business, the number one risk to small businesses, and in there I talk about how the number one risk is a breach. And I say that because, you know, like I said, things have changed. I do speaking engagements as well, and I try to educate small businesses, medical practices, try to get them to understand you can't just put an antivirus on a computer and that's okay. That's enough. Because back in the 90s, that was enough. But not here in 2020. It's just not enough. They know, you know, bad actors know so many ways around that. And if you want to truly protect your data, your information, your critical information, you got to do more. You got to think past that. You got to think over and beyond just a firewall and an antivirus. Things, you know, that's why I do those things. I try to go out and educate as many people as I can, trying to get them to understand that. So, yes, I wrote a book, and that's what it's about. It's about educating people to understand what they need to look for, what is going on, what's truly going on, so they'll know, so they're not blindsided. And that's why I also do speaking engagements as well. I enjoy getting in front of people and educating them. I really do.
Excellent. Now, is this book self-published? Is it available on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. Yes, it's on Amazon, and it is self-published. I did all.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any more plans to publish any more books down the road, or?
As a matter of fact, I'm working on one now. It's actually going to be actually towards dentists. So,
okay, excellent.
You know, to give them more understanding about that as well, because one of the things I've seen in the dental field is some to HIPAA and compliance. I've heard chiropractors. They'll come and say, you know, hey, we're still doctors. People treat them like doctors. And dentists, A lot of times they don't even understand HIPAA, why they have to have what it's about. A lot of them don't. They have to just on the back burners in the back of their minds. But I'm trying to, I want to educate them just as well. So that's one of my main focuses right now is to help the dental practice, you know, dental practices, private practices, to understand their place when it comes to HIPAA and the truth about HIPAA.
Okay, excellent. Now, are all of your clients located in the Indianapolis or Indiana area, or are they nationwide, or do you even have a global presence for that matter?
Right now, they're all in Indiana. I do have all my clients here in Indiana, not just in Indianapolis, but in Indiana. So, and but I can't, you know, what I do, I mean, since hackers can hack you from across the globe, I can protect you across the globe. So with what I do, I can do it remotely, but I do work with a lot of people locally.
Awesome. Now, has Sentry Systems always been into security? Have there been other flavors or different brands of security, like maybe physical guard security? Have you ever ventured into that area too? Or
you said a guard, like a physical guard?
No, like have you always been in security, or are there other realms of maybe not so much information security, or are there other realms of security that Sentry has ventured into as well?
Not so much in just the security side of it. No, we've just been in, and that's why I say, when I say security, I don't say cybersecurity, because security is security. So we are focused on data, you know, your data, your business, everything about your business. So we look at your practice. So if you have a dental practice, we're looking at everything you do. So if I come into the practice and I notice that you have a camera, like a physical camera for your physical security, if I notice something strange about it, like, oh, you know, does it have a password on it? You know, are you doing this? Different things of that nature. I'm looking at every aspect. How are they getting in? How can they get in? I'm looking at everything. Even if someone takes a laptop and goes, you know, to the coffee shop and does work, you know, what kind of internet do they have there? Is it secure? What are they looking at? So I look at every aspect. I don't just look at IT security, because IT security is really the antivirus, firewall, you know, protecting the computers. I'm protecting business, because it's not just the computers they can get in, because I can walk in with a thumb drive and put it in that computer. Somebody can go on Facebook and give information to someone and they're not supposed to, and it could cause a security breach. There's multiple different angles that they can come in with.
Yeah, have you done any work like with physical access entry?
With who?
Physical access entry, like, you know, securing doors inside offices, securing premises.
Only if it actually is part of the network.
Okay.
And that's what I'm getting. A lot of times those cameras are still attached to the server or to a computer somewhere, and it's part of the network. If it's not, then no. But if it is, yes.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is the client that you're typically targeting? The small to medium-sized business, the Fortune 500, or perhaps a mixture of both?
Well, really, we target private practices, medical practices, dental practices. A lot of dental are more private. Some of them are attached to larger HMOs or, you know, or larger entities. But we try to focus on the smaller practices with, you know, 1 to 5 providers. You know, that's kind of what we're looking at.
Oh.
And I say that because – the reason I say that is because that's usually the smaller size, and – they are usually left up to their IT guy to make them secure. They rely on that person, or they don't have it. And like I said in the beginning, IT doesn't really know what they're doing when it comes to security. I'm not saying all of them, because I can say I didn't, and I've got plenty of friends that are in IT, and they don't. They'll tell me, I don't know, how you doing,
right,
Kevin?
Right.
So, yes, so I, like I said, I work with the smaller ones. Can I work with larger? Yes. But that's not who I'm going after. Because the reason I say that is because I see a lot of IT companies going after the larger companies, because they look at them as a cash cow. So I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at their data. I want to protect them. I want to take care of them. I want to take care of the business. I want to focus on their business.
Excellent. Now, have you always been dealing only with healthcare providers, or are there other verticals that you've helped out also?
I started with legal. I work with CPAs as well, but right now mostly I focused on medical. That's just the niche that I'm going after, but I can work with any company. I mean, security is everywhere. So, yes, I have worked with legal. I know legal has a lot of trouble. There's a lot of stuff coming after them. I work with CPAs. I do, you know, I also do assessments, breach analysis. I can, you know, I help people with if they recover from a breach, if they've had a breach, I help them recover from that. I help for disaster preparedness. It's not just the protection side of it. And that's what, you know, talking about security, there's so many different aspects of security. There's a protection layer, but there's also the assess layer. You got to know what you have to be able to protect it. So, and then this protection layer. So you got to put up all the guards and put up all the antiviruses and all the things you need to protect it. But there's also the side of detection. You need to know if they got in, what can you see them? That's one big thing that I don't see happening with most businesses. They don't have true detection. And when it, if they get in, what do they do with them? That's another thing that's open. So if they break in, now there's the recovery part of it. You have to stop them. You have to recover from it. That's another big hole that I see open when it comes to security. And these are things that I've seen trends. Everybody goes after the protection. I think Gartner has a research paper out, and they talk about 90% of all small businesses, they put, well, most small businesses put 90% of their efforts into the protection layer of security. I mean, that's the, and hackers know that. So that's the one thing. They know they can get past that part of it. They know they can get in. If a hacker really wants in, they can get in.
Yeah.
I mean, look at just what happened with SolarWinds and the government. It happens.
Well, now, in that regard, are you an advocate for the Zero Trust framework?
I really haven't. I really don't know too much about it.
Okay. Well, that's kind of basically where you just don't trust anybody anymore, not even, like, your long-lasting employees. You know, everybody has to kind of go through the same levels of authentication. There are at least three or four more levels. Different layers, and you just don't trust anyone anymore. Not even your, for that matter, for lack of a better term, not even your own mother. I mean, everything's at risk, and everybody could be a potential cyber attacker. I think it's a little bit of an extreme, but I think in today's world, it's probably needed. And I think
go ahead. Just knowing that much about it, I would say that I am an advocate for it because I look at it as, I would say, you know, you might have the attitude trust but verify kind of thing. I would say don't trust. And I say that because there's social engineering. There's so many different ways that people can fake everything. They spoof phone numbers. They spoof people's voices. You know that they're actually calling people and asking questions so they can get voice recognition and try to use that to answer questions that, I mean, they're doing everything to get in. So I would say I am an advocate of that because I believe that you have to actually, I always tell people, make sure if somebody sends you an email, don't trust it, call them. Right. Call them and ask.
Yeah, I've kind of fallen prey to that myself too, especially with PayPal. You have no idea how many times I've called to make sure that what they've sent is real because I get so many spam emails from them. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So what
exactly.
Made you choose healthcare? No, go ahead. So what made you choose healthcare? I mean, don't you have to deal with a lot of, like, red tape and compliance, like HIPAA, GDPR, CCPA, and that kind of thing?
That actually, you know, that came from my past. I actually came from a world of working in pharma outside of, not in IT, but in pharma. And dealing with GMP, you know, so I've dealt with Reg regulations. I'm not one that's afraid of regulations because I understand regulations. Regulations are just rules. And you either follow them or you don't. So you know the rules and you just follow them. So that's one of the things I tried to, I started working with healthcare because they don't follow the rules. They don't even look at HIPAA a lot of times. They think that they're okay. I've done surveys and asking, you know, medical practices. I'm like, how's your HIPAA compliance? They're like, oh, it's great. Everything's fine. And it's because they've been told certain things, and they think because their EHR that they have, their EMR or whatever, you know, whatever they're using for their medical practice, they think that they've been told that it's HIPAA compliant. They think they're fine. And I'm like, well, what about your employees? What if they are talking a certain way? How is your practice laid out? Or is it laid out in the shape of a U? Can somebody come on this side and see, you know, information on the other side? Is somebody, that's a HIPAA, you know, that's a violation. You're not supposed to be able to do that. So those are the things that I can walk into a practice and just look at things and tell them that they're wrong, what's wrong, and they need to fix those things. So this is why, because I got into it because I see a lot of a lot of misinformation that's given out. Put it that way. So a lot of people are thinking one thing, and it's not true. I hear a lot of MSPs or computer companies tell them, we're HIPAA compliant. You know, we're HIPAA compliant. I'm like, do you realize you're really never HIPAA compliant? Because you go in and out of compliance all the time. Well, you can be compliant one minute and not the next. So you can't say that somebody's like 100% compliant because they're not always. So you have to go into this understanding that HIPAA is a journey. It's a journey. It's a path. It's something that you are doing all the time. You're constantly doing something, and they're gonna constantly change. So there's so many different paths to get to where you need to go. So you need to be on top of that. You need to know exactly what you're looking for, what you're doing with it. And I just saw a lot of holes in that where they don't.
Okay. Excellent. Now, I looked at your website, and I noticed you have a very rich and diverse product and service line. You have stuff dealing all the way from healthcare security to regulatory compliance to security awareness training, which is a very hot topic today, risk analysis, penetration testing, and ransomware removal. Can you kind of expand a little bit more on all these services and how they are relevant to the e-healthcare industry?
Well, you know, you talk about the assessment part of it. One of the first things that HIPAA tells you have to do, you have to have an assessment. For one, you can't protect what you don't know you have. And one of the things I see a lot, I can go into a practice and start looking at things, and I can ask, how does the data get transferred, get used, where it's put, or whatever? And they're like, oh, we don't use it on these computers. It's not on this computer. It's not on that computer. But then I can actually do a little deep dive and actually find it on the computers. I did one assessment, and they were saying that they don't use any critical data on their computers. It's not stored. They're stored on the server, and that's the only place. So I asked them. I started looking into it, actually, and they would get emails from their patients. They would get emails, and it might have a Social Security number in there. It might have their address in there. And I'm asking a question. I'm like, okay, well, why am I seeing all this in your emails? And they were like, well, we didn't know we had that there. Data hides everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's one big problem. You don't know where it is. You have to look for it. You have to go searching for it. You have to do those things. That's what the assessment is for, to open your eyes to the potential of those risks. When HIPAA violations happen because people just don't realize that they're there, and the only way to help yourself or to minimize those risks of, you know, having a violation is to have your eyes open, and you can only do that through assessments. That's why they created them. So, yes, I have the assessments. Go into a lot deeper than, you know, I've seen some IT, you know, companies, they just have a few questions and that's about it. I go into it a lot deeper than that because, once again, data hides. I want to know the truth. I don't want to just ask them, hey, did you put that? No, I did not. Okay, that sounds good. But that's not, and it's, and it, you know, the unfortunate thing is HIPAA doesn't really give you a type of assessment. The only thing they just have these vague platitude words, like, let's say it has to be a comprehensive assessment. What does that mean? You know, so I have my version of it. Yeah, so I have my version of it, which is a lot deeper than I see a lot of companies go. So I know that, you know, I know, so I do, I go to that level because I really want to help them. And then, you know, I look at the penetration testing. Penetration testing to actually see, can I get in? Because it might say that this, you know, this, and that's not necessarily a requirement by HIPAA, but I'm talking about the things that are there to really help you, to help a practice, to help any business, really. But yes, the penetration testing, it's there to see if I can get in. Just because you might have a firewall, there could be holes in that firewall. I always tell people this. Do you realize every single computer has over 65,000 ports on it? A port is like a door opening to the internet or opening to a software, opening to another computer, opening to a server. It's a door. Do you realize that there every software opens a port on your computer all the time? And also, those ports, depending on the software, sometimes leave those ports open. And hackers know that, so they will actually do scans just to see if there's a port open. If there is a port open, they can get in, put a backdoor in. They can do anything they want. So you have to look for those things. You got to know what you're looking for. And that's what the penetration test does. It doesn't just look for ports. It's seeing, can I get in that port? Can I get into this software? What can I do to this software? What can I see? And that's what it's looking for. And also to see what you can do.
Well, I have a question for you. With regards to your risk assessments, is there a methodology that you follow? I mean, do you follow this framework, or you kind of came up with your own thing, or what do you follow?
It's actually followed by NIST. I mean, I'll be honest with you, all of them are followed by NIST. NIST is the framework for everybody, and everybody else just kind of added on to NIST. So mine is based on NIST. So I look at the framework. That's where they have the assess, protect, detect, respond, and recover. That's the five different levels of security based on NIST. And it's very thorough. It covers everything. And that's what my that's what it's based on. My assessment is based on all of those five areas.
Excellent. Yeah, please go ahead and continue about your other products and services.
I have other things, you know, like I said, just even about the protection side of it. One of the protection side of it I look at, okay, I know that they can get in if they really want to, but I'm going to do everything I can to stop them. So when it comes to, an attack, there's different levels of attack. If you can stop one part of it, this what they call the supply chain, if you can break the supply chain at any point, you can stop the hack. Like, for instance, with ransomware, if you can stop it at the point where it does not talk to the command and control center, then that's breaking the chain. So I have solutions that actually will stop portions of that. I got solutions that will stop it from actually encrypting anything. So if you break, like I said, if you break any of the supply chain from any hack, you can stop the hack. So there's DNS. DNS is something where it goes out and it's looking for, you know, DNS servers. It's called domain name server. So the DNS, it goes out and it actually, let's say that you type in Google in your search bar or anything. You type in Google. The first time you click on it, it goes to a DNS. It goes to a domain name server. So it's looking for the IP address, just like your address in your house. It's looking for that IP address to say, I'm going to tie this IP address to Google. So now that's what one of the parts with cookies do. It stores that on your computer. So now every time you type in Google, it knows what IP address Google has, so it automatically goes to it. It's quicker, makes it faster. So sometimes the DNS, I have a DNS that I use that actually monitors the DNS, because hackers will, you ever go to a website and there's all kinds of ads and stuff on the side and everything. Some of those are actually, they can be, you know, hackers can actually have stuff in those and it downloads it to your computer. So you can actually, you don't even mean to, but you'll automatically go out to that website and it could be an actual malicious website trying to download something. So the DNS that we use, it looks for those things and it stops you from even getting to those. So even if you got ransomware on your computer, you wouldn't even get the command and control center so you could stop it. And then there's different protections that are looking for this. Like I said, I have something that does for the encryption side of it. It looks for rogue encryption stuff, you know, looking for things that are trying to encrypt stuff, so it'll stop that. It's looking for, you know, so it's, and then I also use something called a SOC. That's one of my biggest product that I like to talk to the medical practice about. This is something that you don't see with IT providers. It's a SOC. It stands for Security Operations Center. And I offer that. The reason that is there is because this. Yes. The reason I offer that is because of this. When you go to an airport, you walk through a metal detector, right? You walk through the metal detector, and what else is going on? You put stuff on a conveyor. There's people standing there watching the screen, right? Only had the metal detector. If I had some kind of device, I could have somebody go through first, and then I could hand it around the device and say, the metal detector, and say, here, take this. I would be able to get around that, right? And that's what hackers do. They find a way around it. It's not enough to just do that. So a SOC is actual people looking for things. They're looking for incidents of compromise. So they're looking for things that are like, okay, well, if you take this thing we notice on this thing and that, they're looking for different things, and they put it together and they say, this could be a compromise. And then we flag it and we start looking into it. If it's a compromise, then we stop it. That's what a SOC is for. It's humans actually monitoring your network, monitoring all your devices, your softwares, and things of that nature, as opposed to just having an antivirus going by signatures. That's past that stuff. It's harder to get past another human because they're doing the same thing. They're watching them.
Excellent. Now, are your solutions, are they on-prem or can they be, are they available in the cloud? Or if they're in the cloud, do you make use of Azure or AWS? How does all that work for you?
Well, I don't use, some of it's in AWS. It's not necessarily local here or anything like that. They're just tools that are readily available. But, I mean, like the SOC is part of a SIM, which is actually in the cloud. So you got to use part of that, and it's some of it's agent-based, so you have to put them on the computer so you can monitor everything. So some of it is, none of it's local here, you know, at my office or anything.
Okay, excellent. Now, is HIPAA the only regulatory compliance for the healthcare industry, or are there others? I mean, do the GDPR and the CCPA have a big role in this too, also?
Mostly, well, since we're just in Indiana, we don't have the GDPR. My clients are, and CCPA, which that's the one in California, I think, isn't it? And
I know
I've heard of it. I think it's California. But to know, you know, even forgetting any of that, they're all still basically the same. If you look at them, they still take from NIST and then they have variations. So when it comes, like I said, once it comes to compliance, I work with all types of compliance. I mean, I've worked with, you know, PCI, HIPAA. I haven't really dealt much with GDPR because I don't deal with anybody, you know, as part of the EU. But that's one thing that's missing, like with the medical practices, they forget about the PCI part of it, because a lot of medical practices, you can swipe a card in there. And are they doing anything to protect that? I don't know, you know, so that's why I always talk to them about that as well.
Okay.
So, but some there's still, but there's multiple other compliances, and I say that because even every state has its own level of compliance, and they have the what is it, where you have to inform people of if there was a breach. So
well,
there's different. Every state has their own level. Excuse me.
Since most of your clients are based in the Indiana region, can you give some examples of what Indiana has for compliance requirements?
Well, I know that they have the breach notification law, and if you have more than 500 patients, or even clients, or anybody, if you have 500 records that have been compromised, then you have to inform them. And there's other levels of things you have to tell them, tell the news. There's different things that you have to do at different levels to, you know, to make sure that you're being that's part of that compliance. So that's an Indiana law. There's other laws that are out there. Indiana is starting to develop a more of a breach law. They're working on it. They aren't there yet, but I know that that's one of the things that they're working on, because that's what the CPA, or well, not CPA, but the one that you just mentioned earlier for California, and the GDPR.
Yeah.
A lot of them, they're working some, they're making some for what I heard, is every state's going to have one, and Indiana is just one of those states. We're going to have one as well.
Well, now that brings up another question. What do you feel about all these states having their own privacy laws? Will it just be far more effective just to have, like, one federal compliance mandate so everybody follows the same sets of laws, standards, and best practices?
I think there should be a – well, if you think about this, I personally think there should be one federal one. And I think that there should be policing at the state. And I don't mean state. I don't mean state people. I just mean as in the sense of there can be variations from that. Because, okay, like the reason I say that is because, like HIPAA. HIPAA is a federal one. But there's certain groups and people that do not follow it. They don't understand it. They think, like I told you earlier, they think that they're – their practice management software is good enough. That's HIPAA. And that's not HIPAA. There's more to it than that. So I think that there should be different laws based on those. And I say that because it's just like medical, because HIPAA has, I mean, it's, you know, its whole abbreviation is about insurance. So it's health information, privacy, I forget the actual acronym. I can't even think of it right now. Accountability Act. That's it. So it's about insurance. So every state has different levels of insurance as well, too. So I believe that there should be a federal for Privacy Act. And I know that they were even looking in that, but I don't know how far they got with what they're going to do, because I heard that we were going to adopt it just like, something like the GDPR, because that's more of a federal thing for them. But then we may have to go down to state levels and have our own variations of things. And I'm not against that. Only reason I say that is because we need it. We really do. The United States is horrible when it comes to cybersecurity. Why do you think we get attacked so much? Because it's so easy to attack us. We're just now starting to wake up and actually go, oh, we need to do something about this. So,
well,
we do. We need to wake up and do something. So,
well, I guess you can kind of go back to like 9/11. I mean, that was a big wake up call, but we kind of just regressed well after that.
Yeah, so. Just like anything.
Excuse me. So now, next question is, let me see here. Now, what about security awareness training? You know, security awareness training, given the work from home, remote workforce thing, is starting to become a very, very hot topic. Do you offer security training to these medical practices? Why do they need it? And, like, what do you focus on the training? Is it mostly, like, how to avoid phishing scams, or just how to keep data safe in general? What do you focus on primarily?
Well, the security awareness training, we have both sides for our medical practice. We offer the HIPAA security training, and it's just HIPAA training in general. We also offer the security awareness training. And I know some people think that there's one and the same, but they're not. HIPAA has their laws, but there's also just general. The other side of the security training is also, it is offers, you know, like weekly tips and different things of that nature, things to look for. And what we'll do is, let's say that there's a new scam that's out. We'll give you a tip on that. It gives you what to look for, what to do about it, who to call, how to get out of it. Because I've known people to, you know, they'll get a call from maybe a police officer. They think it's a police officer and tell them, you have to pay this or this ticket or whatever, or you're going to be, you know, getting thrown in jail. And they are giving their information on the phone right there. And I mean, they do stuff all the time. And those are the things, that's what the security awareness is about. It is about, you know, looking for phishing emails and stuff like that. But that's kind of getting, you know, worn out. People kind of, I know about that, but the scams are really big. So, and that's what the training is about. The security awareness training is about those things that they may call you, send you emails about, what you look for, because the emails have gotten really good. There's also not just phishing. It talks about vishing, you know, which is voice phishing or video, or not video, but voice phishing, where they're calling you and asking questions, and like I spoke earlier about. So there's different ways that they will attack. So that's why we do the training for every aspect of it. So it's not just about the, you know, emails as much as that, but it is definitely about emails, because they're still getting in that way, because they're getting really sophisticated.
Oh, yeah. It's called V phishing, actually. I think that the technical term to it, the voice phishing. And I get so many robocalls. I don't even pick up the phone anymore. I mean, it's just so annoying.
Yeah, no.
I figure it's important
enough.
If it's important enough, somebody will probably, you know, leave a message. If not, yeah, I just delete. Who cares? You know, it's just I don't even pick. But your social engineering is going to start to pick up, if not, if it hasn't already picked up, because, you know, a lot of cyber attackers think, you know, that the companies are not just worried about the digital security, but, you know, who's preventing anyone from calling, you know, an administrative assistant is kind of scaring her. Well, I need all this money wired, transferred over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that's something people need to be, you know, on the lookout for too as well. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the training in there too, about those.
Yeah, now with tax season coming up, are you going to be doing anything with the accountants or anything? I was going to ask you that, and I kind of forgot, so I thought I would ask you in white when I just remembered. Because
yes,
there's a lot of stuff.
Like I said, I work with CPAs, and I do assessments for them as well, looking for those same type of scenarios. They do it to anybody. They do it to everybody. You know, it's just that CPAs don't have as – they don't have the big HIPAA thing hanging over their head, but I do.
Well,
I work with them just as well.
Well, are there any compliance legislations for the financial industry or like HIPAA or nothing really?
See, when it comes to a lot of other areas, there's, like, I know if, like, for legal, they have the more of it's more of ethics. It's more of you should do this, you should do that. They don't have a governing body to force them. They all have some type of compliance, but it's more or less between people or businesses. So if I go and do something, you know, over here with a CPA, in their governing body, they say that you're supposed to do these things, you should do this, you should do that. There's no government. Like, HIPAA is a federal thing. These are more industry level. You see what I'm saying? So it's more compliance, and it's more of an ethics type of scenario as opposed to a federal law. Like, when it comes to legal, they're supposed to be as secure as their most secured client. Do they do that? No. I mean, you know, they don't even look at that. But who's going to find out unless somebody complains? And that's kind of even the way people look at HIPAA. So there's that part of the compliance. But like I said, so I just try to educate them as best I can and try to get them to understand, you got to look at this differently. What if this was your family and they were stealing your data, their information, they were using it for horrible things? Wouldn't you want to stop that? I would do everything I could to stop that.
Yeah, for sure. No, because I know taxes, I know the accounts, you know, the cyber attackers not just going after, you know, the individuals now. Now they're going after the accounts because, you know, they've got their databases of, you know, PII data stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going after, you know, the IRS creating phony, you know, web. In fact, even when COVID hit, you know, I mean, there's like phony websites and getting, you know, your stimulus money and this and that.
It's crazy.
But anyway.
Yes.
Maybe we have another podcast with you early next year about the tax season. How about that, huh?
There you go. Sure.
Yeah. Anyway. So, okay. Now, what about the security risk analysis? I know you had mentioned the NIST. Now, do you take more of a qualitative approach or do you take a quantitative approach? Because I'm about to start to write a book just on cyber risk. And I believe in taking more of a quantitative approach. Well, you got to take both. But I think a lot.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Both.
Yeah, because a lot of people a lot of people think, oh, I've done the statistical model and it tells me to rank it so forth on a scale of 1 to 10. That's enough. Is that really enough, or I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's why I may base it on that, but then I take it further and look at the qualitative because I want to make sure that I'm basing it on reality. Not just based on, you know, these numbers. To me, the numbers part of it makes it too easy. Just looking at the quantitative part of it is just too easy. I want to actually look and see what's going on. I want to actually take a step back. So, I mean, when I do scans, I interview, I mean, I talk to people and really dig in and find out what is actually going on in their practice, their business. Because you can have one medical practice and another one doing something totally different. They could be in the exact same field. They could have the same specialty. And they do things totally different because it's like, well, we decided to do this. We decided, okay, and that's fine. But are those things going to be secure? Are they going to secure the data? Are they going to secure the people even? And that's one, you know, and it may not. This one is doing this where this hole is over here, and this one's doing that, and this hole is over here. So I look at the entire thing, and that's what I'm saying. It's not just I go out and do a scan like a lot of IT companies do. They do these scans, and they come back with these, and they're all about ports, and that's it. You know, ports and if your software is updated or not. I'm like, there's more to it than that, a lot more to it than that. Mm-hmm. So if somebody can – because – a lot of times when hackers get in, it's because somebody on the other side of the firewall let them in. So you got to educate them as well.
Now, tell us about the penetration testing. I've done a lot of interviews with pen testers, and they all have their own different views on things. What kind of approach do you take? Are you more of a red teamer, blue teamer, purple teamer, or kind of all of them?
I use what I need to do, put it that way. Sometimes I do, it depends on how deep we need to go. I may do one where it's actually doing, you know, like social engineering. It just depends. I may just do a scan, you know, you can do just a port scan. That's still considered a penetration test because you're trying to get in through ports. And that's what hackers as well do that. But you can do those type of scans. I'm not really that deep into it as in like, you know, red teams and all these different things. Cause you usually do that on larger scale businesses or the government, you know, you see that, you don't see that in smaller private practices or smaller businesses. Just do a general test, see if you can get in and then go from there.
Excellent. Now, do you do these pen tests yourself or do you create your own team to help you out?
I work with different teams. I've got some other vendors I actually work with. Some of it's vendors that I work with that I trust and know, and then some of it is me. So it just like I said, it just depends.
Now, ransomware removal. This is going to be, I think, the biggest cyber threat here in 2021, or one of the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, can it be removed? Second, can their files be recovered? And three, what about paying the ransom? Do you think that person should pay a ransom to the cyber attacker?
And, you know, that's the million-dollar question. That's something you hear. One person says yes, some say don't. I agree with both. I'll tell you why. If you are, especially in healthcare, because one of the things in healthcare, you have to have what they call CIA, credibility, and it's credibility, integrity, and availability. If you can't get to your data, that is a HIPAA violation. Just ransomware itself can be a HIPAA violation. If you cannot get to your data and give, because you're supposed to be able to, availability is supposed to be able to give it to your patient if they need it. If you can't get to it or somebody else has control of it, that can be a HIPAA violation. So if you're in a pinch and you're trying to get out of this violation that you're in, or and it's stopping you from running your business and everything, everything just stops, you may want to pay it. I mean, I understand why people would want to pay it, just to get out of that situation. I'm not a big advocate for that, and I say this because the reason they're doing that is because they're getting money so they can go do other things. And that's where it, you know, that gray area comes in. Do I want to fund their other malicious activities that they're doing in the dark web? Which, you know, I don't want to go into that stuff here because I know some of the stuff they're doing. But that's one of those things. Do you want to actually feed their hunger for the devious things they're doing? At that point, I say no. But like I said, I love the saying where it says the I can never remember it exactly, but an ounce of what is it? An ounce of preparation is worth a pound of prevention. What's that?
Okay. I think it was an ounce what did you prevention say? Something.
Yes. Ounce of prevention is worth a pound of whatever the other one is. But anyway, basically what it's saying is that I'd rather prevent it from ever happening or do what I can up front. And that's one thing I see a lot of as well. People aren't prepared for this. So that's why we also do, you know, disaster preparedness. That's when we actually go through scenarios with companies, businesses, practices, and show them what happens if the doctor's out. What happens if COVID happens? You know, what is your plan? What are you going to do? What plans do you have? What do you have in place to cover this, to cover that? Because, you know, bad actors can do stuff, and so you'll do something else so they can get to it. So that's why, you know, I tried to get them, educate them enough to do that. But you got to do it up front. You got to get them to know that you got to do the right prevention so that you don't have to worry about those things in the future. Be prepared.
Okay. Now, why is ransomware becoming so prevalent in healthcare, in the healthcare industry? I mean, there's so many industries cyber attacker can go after. Why is it just healthcare?
Well, because for one, like I said, they're not a lot of healthcare. They don't even follow HIPAA. HIPAA has some levels of security in it. A lot of them don't follow it. They don't do what they're supposed to do, and they know that IT does not know what they're doing when it comes to security. And they know that medical practices only follow their IT guy. That's not good enough. They know that. They also know that the information, the wealth of information that they have that they want to sell, once again, they want to sell it. It's like if you could go, you know, okay, why is the car thief still a real expensive car? Because they know they can sell it and get more money out of it because it's a real expensive car. It's exotic. So hackers go after information that other people want. That information in medical is, you know, our social security number. It's got their addresses, our names. It's got all these different things about us, and they can use that to do whatever they want. A lot of times they just want to start mischief, unfortunately, because now they've even started hacking into MRIs and actually changing the data that you're sick or not or whatever. They can show you that you have cancer and you don't. I mean, I personally don't know what else they would gain out of that besides just mischief, because it's not, they're going to sell that information, you know. So I don't know why they're doing it, just to say they did, I think. Because you don't hear about it as much, but it does happen.
Right.
But it's because of the wealth of information that's there, they can sell it.
Well, now, that brings up my next question to you, the Internet of Things, because a lot of medical devices now are kind of, you consider them like an IoT thing. I find the IoT to be very, a very concept. I don't like having things interconnected. I mean, I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. I still drive a Honda 03 Civic. Nothing. It's all analog instrumentation.
There you go.
Do you have a smart home or a smart car? And what do you think about all these medical devices being connected? I mean, it's not just a cyber attack or breaking to a server. I mean, they can literally kill someone while they're walking. You know, like they can do something to their pacemaker. They only defibrillate. I mean, what are your thoughts on all that? I think it's crazy. It's horrible.
Yeah, it is a scary thing. As a matter of fact, they had a pacemaker. I think it was 2 years ago. There was a pacemaker that had a vulnerability in it. And they were scared that something was going to happen. Nothing ever happened that I heard of, but they were afraid of it. But there was a pacemaker that they had been out for years. It had a vulnerability in it, and they knew that. But like I said, I don't know if anything ever happened. I never heard of anything, but they knew about the vulnerability. But that is that. You're exactly right. That's scary. It's at a point now that they can kill people just through hacking, because there was the hack over in, I think it was in Iran, where they did the centrifuges, and I forget the stocks. Was that Stuxnet? Yeah, I think. Anyway, there was a hack that they did over there, and they made these centrifuges go crazy. And I don't even know if they blew up or not. I think they just ramped up, but they could have, and they could have caused a lot of problems. So there's so many things that can happen now. I mean, to the point of, you know, hacking, you know, any power grids or anything like that, it could happen. Shut down all the power across the country. I mean, any of those things can happen. And the Internet of Things that are with the medical practices, yes, those things, yeah, there's just way too many things that are touching the Internet now. Way too many things. I get it when they're talking, and this is the other thing. Some people say, well, this doesn't, you know, it's our intranet. It's only touching these things. But is it? Have you really done an audit to really see, an assessment to really see if it's touching anything else? Because one of the things, there was one the FBI found. Somebody had told the FBI, said, hey, my medical information is online. You could just go out and search your name, and found their medical information just on Google. The reason for that is because a practice, I think it was a large hospital, they had put in a new server. This server automatically had their web, the web stuff turned on. So when they hooked up to the internet, to the network, it was actually broadcasting itself as an actual website. It was a web server in a sense, and it wasn't supposed to be. That wasn't their plan. But if they would have gone back and done an audit on that system, anytime you make any changes in your network, you're supposed to do an audit on it. They would have found that, but they didn't. So that's what I'm saying about, you know, okay, it's only connected to the stuff that's inside of my network. I'm not connected outside. Are you sure of that? Because a lot of these Wi-Fi enabled and Bluetooth enabled devices will just connect to stuff depending on what it is. So if you have it segmented, what's saying it's not connected to the other one that's not supposed to be connected to? So you have to go in and truly segment your network and actually stop it from connecting to anything but this specific thing. The problem with that is it being done? it can be protected, but it's not necessarily being done, and that's where we don't know.
Okay, excellent. Now, who's more at risk, the small medical practices or the larger clinics or hospitals? I mean, look, everybody's prone to becoming a victim of cyber attack, but who's more prone to this?
Well, you hear more about larger, like, hospitals, because that gets in the news. Once again, like I said before, there's local compliances where there's so many, you know, records get hacked or breached, you have to announce it to the news. So that's why you hear more about it. But let's say that, you know, this small mom-and-pa little, you know, medical practice has, like, you know, maybe 3 providers in there or whatever. It's small enough. I mean, only 20 people are in there. And let's say they have, you know, 3,000 patients or patient records even. Let's say they're even older records. And they may just not say anything because they know that they're supposed to announce it. If they don't announce it, then nobody knows. They just try to cover it up or fix it. The other thing I've seen some where it might be the IT provider that knew that they screwed up, and they don't say anything to the practice, and they fix it. This is another reason why you're supposed to have assessments and audits. Because you just never know what you're going to find. And you can't just take it for granted that, oh, this, everything's good. So once again, I always say this, when it comes to practices, when it comes to them not wanting to really do anything about it, I say trust but verify. They don't want to talk to their IT company. I'm like, look, you need to trust but verify. Make sure that they're doing what they're – it's not to say – I don't trust you, is to say, hey, let's verify. For one, if you haven't, you know, you can't trust every single one of your employees. You know, you don't know what they're going to do. You don't know what kind of day they're having. You just don't know. So the best thing to do is trust but verify. It's like, okay, you say that. I want a third party to come in and do an assessment on my network and see what's going on and see if, you know, if there's something going on special, something we just overlooked. It's not a negative thing against the IT provider, but we need to trust but verify. We need to verify it.
Well, now, do you have any, kind of going back to your customers, do you have any success stories or testimonials that you can share with us that are not, like, proprietary or anything?
Well, I just tell you that I know I've had clients that one of them, like I was talking about, a sock. Once again, I've got all these things in there. And somebody still tried to get in. They still were able to get in because they actually downloaded some software and stuck it on their computer. Now, this software, they already had it on. They already had the software. They just did an update. This is another thing. I've seen this a lot. As a matter of fact, that's what happened. You heard about SolarWinds just recently, the past week or so. SolarWinds, that's what happened to them. This is the same thing that happened to my client. They had a software that they already had on there, and what happened, they went and updated the software. But what happened was the hacker got into their update software and put something on that. So when they downloaded the update, my antivirus didn't pay. The antivirus that I used didn't pay attention to it. It's like, it's already on here. It's already okay. This is the problem with antivirus. So, but my SOC that I have caught it. Somebody's doing this and somebody's doing that. Like I said, the incident of compromise, or see this and see that and say, this should not be happening at 4 o'clock in the morning. This software shouldn't be doing this. Okay. Now we go and investigate it. We find out what it is. We stop it. We break the supply chain. They can't get in. Then we just block it. You turn that port off, whatever you need to do. And that's what we did. They were very happy. They were able to block this, stop it, jump right on it. You know, you just do something about it. These are the things that I'm talking about that IT just usually doesn't go into it that deep. This is not their wheelhouse.
Well, no,
you need a third party, somebody that understands security.
That's another question. Why is there such a disconnect between the IT department and the IT security team? Don't you think they should be working hand in hand with each other, or it's just more of a turf, protecting their own turfs, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's more, IT's been around longer than really security in itself. It's always been, IT was security. Now that you have, now that's actually becoming its own leg, which it used to not be, it used to just be IT. It's becoming its own leg. It is kind of a turf war because IT doesn't want to give up that. They don't want to give up the fact that, hey, we don't really understand. And that's what I'm telling you. That's what I did. I had to realize I don't understand this. And I broke away from general IT and started doing security because it's actually getting worse. I always say now, I'm like, look, when it comes to IT, computers just work. You take 20 years ago, I mean, you could hardly get two computers to talk to each other. Nowadays, you just put them in the same room, and they just automatically start talking to each other. They just work so much better than they used to 20 years ago. But when it comes to cybersecurity and hacking and all, you better be on your toes because those guys out there know what they're doing. They are programmers. They're not IT guys. They are programmers. They know software. They know how to manipulate it.
Wow. Now, why should a Kevin, honestly, I mean, there's, what, over 2,000 cyber vendors here in the U.S. Why should a client come to you and say, Kevin, I want your services? In other words, what is your market differentiator from all the other 2,000 vendors that a person can choose from? Or what makes you special?
Well,
let me ask you that.
One thing, I guess this is one thing. When I see, I mean, I know you, a lot of those cyber security companies, there's two breeds of them. You have either IT guys actually saying they're cybersecurity and not necessarily are. They're still focused on protection. Like I said, they got past my protection. I know what I'm doing. So you have a lot of IT guys saying that there's security because that's what they've been told to by marketing companies. They tell them, hey, you need to start talking about cybersecurity. It's like, but it's just an IT guy selling more security stuff, not necessarily being experts. Then you have the other side that are experts. And the only thing that they deal with are large hospitals, government, you know, deal with municipalities. They don't work with small businesses. My unique part of it is I work with small businesses. I mostly work with medical practices, private practices. I don't work with hospitals. I have nothing against hospitals, but, you know, there's bigger companies out there that do that. So I don't want to get in that pond. I look at it this way. I forget how many millions of businesses in the United States, but I tell you this, just in the United States alone, over 90% of the businesses in the United States have no employees. So it just tells you how small businesses are. They're not that big. Most of them are not that big. Only about 5 million businesses in the United States have more than 20 employees. They're mostly small businesses.
Do you have employees in your company, or is this primarily you, or?
Primarily me.
Okay. Excellent. Now, as we wrap up, as we're coming into our last part of our show here, just a couple of cyber issues I want to talk to you about, which have been kind of around this year, but going into next year. One of them is artificial intelligence. Now, that's one of the biggest buzzwords that's being thrown around in cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very poorly misunderstood term. Really, all it is garbage in, garbage out, just using, you know, fine-tuned data sets. What are your thoughts on AI? I mean, like, I know in pen testing it's used quite a bit there to help automate, you know, mundane processes. And it does have its good parts, too. It can be used, you know, model the threat landscape. It can be used to help filter out for the false positives so that the IT security or cybersecurity team can, you know, triage only the real ones. But what are your thoughts on AI? I mean, do you think it is what it's being claimed to be, or it's just another tool out there that's being given a big buzzword, or what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's one of those things. I think it's growing, and I don't have a problem with it until I do. I say that because I haven't seen a major problem. The only problem I do see with it is that hackers are using it as well. And but I know, like, in the, you know, the cyber industry, you know, like, some of the stuff that I use has AIs on it. You know, it's using AIs. And the artificial intelligence, it has its purpose. I do believe it has its purpose. I don't think it's causing a problem with when it comes to cybersecurity besides bad actors going and getting it and using it, creating their own and doing the same thing and getting around our, you know, defenses. You know, they only have to get right once. We got to get right every single time. So, I do see that it has its purpose, and I don't see a problem with it besides them getting a hold of it and doing it.
Okay. I mean, Do you make use of AI in your practice, in your cyber practice, for your own services and products, or?
Yes, I do. I do have some AI in some of the things I work with.
Okay.
A lot of the protection side of it is a lot of AI.
Okay, excellent. Now, the next big hot topic is, a year ago, you know, nobody ever thought that the world would be turned upside down the way it's been this year and maybe going into next year.
Right.
And you probably know what I'm talking about, right? The remote workforce and COVID-19. How has it impacted you, your clients, and how is that going to play out next year? I mean, we've seen so many different things, you know, like domain heisting, fictitious websites, and Zoom bombing, this, mm-hmm. that. I mean, what is going to happen next year with all that?
Well, one of the things I see, you know, for me, being in the medical field, it just happens to be in a field that is not going away. There hasn't been a decline in anything in that. So for my specific, you know, niche that I work with, I haven't seen a blip. So, you know, there's other things outside of the medical itself, like, oh, they might want to do a conference call on Zoom, but I mean, you know, they got Zoom, so not really a big deal. But what I see, you know, in the future, when it comes to, you know, hackers, it's just more of the same thing. There's different scams they come out with. I mean, as soon as COVID hit, they started coming out with scams. They started producing them and putting them out there. People were going on and signing up, like you mentioned earlier, about the PPP, the money for different things. There was hackers and scammers about those things. And it just makes it, you know, we just have to be more on our heels trying to figure this out, you know, fighting the good battle.
Okay.
So it makes us think we have to think just as fast as they do.
Yeah, it's kind of like a big cat and mouse game, right? I mean, it's hard.
Yes.
It's really hard.
Yes.
Now, what do you think the biggest threat will be? Now, assuming that COVID didn't happen, what do you think the biggest threat will be in 2021 with regards to cybersecurity? I think one huge threat is going to be the attack on critical infrastructure. But that's just my thought. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I still see ransomware being a big threat. This is their cash cow. And the other thing that happened in 20, which is going to continue to grow in 2021, they're attacking MSPs, managed service provider, which are IT companies, because they have the keys to the kingdom of lots of businesses. So they've been attacking them, because that's what SolarWinds is. If they attack them and they're able to go in and get data from all whatever business they want. So that's one thing. Those two things they're cash cows right now, and they know that. So they're going to go stronger on those two. Ransomware has, you know, all they did is just painted it a different color. Last year, you know, past couple of years, they've done a couple of things, and I really believe that the Petya and the WannaCry, I believe they were test runs for something bigger that's coming. Because Petya didn't even have a payment process. They didn't even have a way to even pay it to get your code to get your data back. And it was just disruptive. It just destroyed stuff.
Well, Kevin, as we wrap up our show, I'm going to save the best question for last. When your clients and many of your family members, close friends, approach you, do you get asked, like, what can I do to mitigate the risk of being attacked? And do you have a laundry list that you tell clients, well, hey, you should do this, you should do that? What do you tell people normally? Or are you like a little pocket protection list or anything you give out or anything like that? Or
well, I tell you this. It's hard to answer that question because I can't just answer it because if they ask me that, because I have to see what they're doing. Once again, it's quantitative, like I was saying earlier. It's not just, oh, just get a good antivirus. I mean, yeah, I got those basic little statements to say, just as, but it's not good enough anymore. It's not good enough. You have to assess your situation. Like I said, I mean, there's lawyers and doctors say, oh, we don't use that information on these computers. And then I go and do my assessment. I see it all over the place. I mean, they don't even know that it's there. Computers do things. You don't know what they're doing. So you got to check them. You got to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do or whatever they're doing. So it's hard to say that. I mean, yeah, you got to do – there's, like I said, there's typical things you should do. Like you should always do security awareness training. That should always be just to kind of keep the people. That's the most dangerous part of it is the people. So that is the number one thing you should do is security awareness training. And you definitely should stay away from – you know, unknown antivirus software. I mean, you know, I say that because I guess I'm thinking of a paid version of it at least. Because some people get, oh, I got this free antivirus online. I'm like, well, where'd you get it? Whose is it? You know, get something from Norton or something like that. But, and like I said, those are platitude answers, but they're not really the answer.
Exactly. Well, I'll give an example of my computer. I mean, I try to keep a – no, I'm not like a computer. I mean, I'm a writer and, you know, podcast, but I'm not like a developer geek. I'm not a software programmer or anything like that. I'm not even really a computer geek for that matter. In all honesty, I hate Windows 10. I mean, I'm very impressed with Microsoft Azure and everything that comes with it, but Windows 10 is something that I just don't like. And a few days ago, my computer just locked up. My mouse just stopped working, and I thought, okay, maybe it's just a dead battery. Changed battery, didn't work, cleaned out. Then the trackpad stopped. My computer's like locked up, and then when I looked at the task manager, there's some weird process that was occurring, which I never even saw before. You know, it's the CPU used up to about 20%. The fan kept going on. So I rebooted twice, and every time I rebooted, the same process came up. I never saw it before, and after a while, it just went away. I don't think it's like now or anything, but you're right. I just don't need that test, man. But it just is an example of what you're talking about. You just don't know what's running on your computer. I mean, there's many things. If you look at test manager, I mean, I don't know what's 90% of the stuff is, you know? So right. that's just an example. But anyway, so for my computer's working okay, knock on wood. So hopefully it stays that way. But my next one's going to be a Mac iOS, I think. So it's going to be a Mac OS.
Ah. Yeah,
I like it. But anyway, that's just more of my just babbling about stuff there. But anyway, Kevin, so if someone from our audience or a potential prospect wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
They can go to my website and there's a contact me on there. They can call 317-939-3282. Or they can send me an email directly at Mabry, M-A-B-R-Y, _ Kevin, at centrysystems.com, S-E-N-T-R-E-E, systems.com.
Okay. Well, Kevin, it's been a great podcast, and thank you for your time this evening. We wish you and your family a very happy Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we hope to have you again for another podcast, hopefully soon. In that regard, we're going
to
talk about the accounts, you know, and with tax season coming up, because that's going to, as we talked about before, it's going to be a huge, huge, you know, red spot, you know, for cybersecurity.
Yes.
So hopefully we can maybe do one sometime next February or so.
Okay.
Well,
sounds
once
good.
Again, thanks for your time, and we look forward to working with you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.